The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
A study out of Belgium found a COVID infection temporarily reduces sperm count and quality. 60% of men saw a decrease in motility within 1 month of infection. 28% of men still had lower motility after 2 months. After 2 months, fertility rates returned to normal.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that's a pretty big story. New studies are showing the impact of COVID-19 on fertility. I don't know if you know anyone who's struggling to get pregnant. I hear these intentions all the time during the chaplet. Many people praying for children. And, you know, fertility rates have been dropping in our country for a while, particularly amongst men. But I thought maybe we'd talk a little bit about COVID, the vaccine, fertility, monkeypox. It's your opportunity to get your question into Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, who's going to be stopping by. The number for you to get in, 888-914-9149. Let me tell you what's going on here, though, first. Kind of set the scene for you, and then let's talk about it. I personally feel this. I don't even feel this way. If you feel this way. COVID is, in some respects, in the rear view. I know there's still lots of cases. One of my colleagues here at the network the other day wasn't feeling well. He got tested, and he's got COVID. He's probably got, the BA5 variant. So it's still there. It's not dominating the headlines like it did, last year or really just gripping the world by the throat like it did the year before that. In fact, you probably heard yesterday, President Biden has got COVID again. It's his second bout with it. They call it a rebound COVID. He's received both vaccine shots and he's had three booster shots, yet he has had COVID now twice. So say a prayer for him. Say a prayer for his health. But one of the things that caused a lot of people worry about the vaccines, especially with the Merck and the Pfizer, those mRNA shots, is does it impact people's fertility? What are the side effects of this? There's pretty much just a giant human study group that's out there. We haven't had long-term ability to study this. Not long after the vaccines were rolled out, women started saying, my menstrual cycle is being disrupted. We've heard reports of clotting issues. We've heard all sorts of different reports about some of the side effects. There were some allegations of increased reports of miscarriages, stillbirths. One doctor, he reported recently that miscarriages and fetal deaths and stillbirths, they've also risen since the shot was rolled out. Now, maybe there's another explanation for that. As I said, Dr. J might be able to give us some perspective on this. I'm just telling you what's being reported. And you can share what you've seen or what you heard. Back in, I guess it was last year, I think it was November of 2021, there was a hospital in North Vancouver, British Columbia. I think it was called Lionsgate. They delivered, now listen to this, 13 stillborn babies. You might think, oh, well, no. Let me give you the proper perspective on that. 13 stillborn babies in a 24-hour period. So they said, what's the common denominator? We never saw anything like this. All of the mothers had received the COVID jab. In the five countries with the highest number of vaccines, fertility's dropped an average of 15%, whereas the five countries with the lowest number of vaccines, they've seen a decline, but only about 5%. So another vaccine that's being rolled out right now is a vaccine against monkeypox, and I do want to talk about this as well. We'll get into that as well. In fact, it's already out, to be honest with you, but it hasn't been tried on a large scale, and according to Tim Wynn, he's the head of the World Health Organization's Infectious Hazards Preparedness Agency. He says the monkeypox vaccine's efficacy, it's not really known. It hasn't been used on a large scale, so we'll have to see how it all plays out. But the Epoch Times reported that he said, and I'll quote the Epoch Times, that, quote, I would like to underline one thing that is very important to the WHO. We do have certainty around the effectiveness of these vaccines because, let me rephrase that because I'm quoting him here. We do have uncertainty around the effectiveness of these vaccines because they haven't been used in this context and in this scale before, end of quote. He went on to say this, when the vaccines are being delivered, that they're delivered in the context of clinical trial studies and prospectively collecting this data to increase our understanding of the effectiveness of these vaccines, end of quote. I know it's a mouthful. Let's talk about it. We'll talk about fertility, motility. We'll take a look at monkeypox. We'll take your calls, okay? I'm joined this afternoon by Dr. Jay Bhattacharya. He teaches at the Center for Primary Care and Outcomes Research at Stanford University School of Medicine. He's been with us many times in the past. Sits on lots of boards. He's a specialist in infectious disease epidemiology, and it's good to tap into his genius. Doctor, welcome back.
Good to be back, Drew. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Let's start with this fertility issue first. I can't tell you how many people call the show when I pray the chaplet, and they're saying, can you pray for fertility? I get lots of emails. And people are always looking for reasons. You know, I saw some of these reports. What evidence? What's the evidence, that vaccines have anything to do with this, if at all? Are they messing with women's menstrual cycles? What do you make of all these miscarriages? I'd love to get your take on some of what's being reported.
Sure. So on the menstrual cycles, there actually is evidence that the vaccines can temporarily disrupt women's menstrual cycles. The literature suggests something like, 20, 30, 40% of women experience some irregularities, including, sometimes heavier frequency, sometimes delays. But that most women by 2 or 3 or 4 months after the vaccine who have those irregularities have recovered, although there's some, case studies that suggest that it might be longer. It seems to be worse for women that are on contraception, hormonal contraception. The literature is suggested that it's not a permanent thing. On sperm counts, you just heard that story about COVID and sperm counts,
right.
Which is that the COVID infection can cause reductions in sperm counts temporarily. Again, that's true actually for the vaccine as well. There are now reports in the literature suggesting that for 1 or 2 or 3 months after you have the vaccine, the sperm counts can be lowered. Not enough for everybody, but for some people. It's hard to predict who, but that again, it tends to recover over time. On spontaneous abortions and miscarriages, there the news is better. There's been now a number of reports published in the Journal of the American Medical Association and other high-profile journals that have looked carefully trying to see if people who've had the vaccine have higher rates of women that have had the vaccine while they're pregnant have higher rates of abortion, spontaneous abortion or miscarriage. And it turns out the answer is no, they do not. I was actually, worried about that. I think I remember maybe it was a year or more ago on your show that someone asked me about that. And I said, we didn't know for certain. And it's been nice to see some confirmation that it didn't have that effect. You said fertility. That is a really interesting question. The piece of evidence you said was that in countries that have the vaccine more, you've had more fertility decline than in countries that have the vaccine less.
Right.
But that's a little complicated because the countries that have the vaccine less tend to be African countries and poor countries that already have high fertility rates. It's the West that has had the highest rates of vaccines, and the Western fertility rates have been declining very sharply for a long time. So I don't.
But let
know
me let me stop don't. You on that point for a second, just so I get clarity. Let's take those nations like Africa that have higher fertility rates. Let's just look at the number in let's say first world countries that have this decline. Is there any data that shows fertility prior to COVID-19 versus this 15% fertility drop that we're seeing now? I mean, is it precipitous? Is it the same trajectory? What are we seeing?
It is steeper. There's no question it's steeper. The question is whether it's due to the vaccines, whether it's due to lockdowns. In 2020, there was a decline in fertility. Everyone thought because there were these lockdowns and stay-at-home orders that there might be an increase in fertility. But in fact, the opposite happened. And maybe it's not surprising, right? So the lockdowns and the policies and the whole situation for the last two and a half years has been one that's been very depressing and distressing for many, many people. People have lost their jobs. The people have been scared. They've broken connections with family members and friends. They've had many, many fewer opportunities, even to go to church because churches have been closed. Things that bring meaning to their life have been cut. And that also has an effect on fertility, a negative one. So my point is not that we don't know for sure about the vaccine. Right. My point is that we don't know exactly what the reasons are. They're complicated and multifaceted.
No, I agree. I think it's problematic when you see fertility rates down 15% like that. And you're right. I mean, we don't know. I think further study and a longer view would certainly help. Let me do this. I know you have about 10 more minutes. If you want to join us, you've got a question or a comment, this is a good time to get in. I'll give you the number. It's 888-914-9149. We're speaking today with Dr. Jay Bhattacharya. And let's take a call or two. We'll start in California for you, Doctor. Mary's got a question, I believe, about the Novavax vaccine. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Drew. Thank you, and thank you to Doctor. I just wanted to know, because I'm in front of a no-appointment vaccination site, and I have no choice. I'm unvaccinated. I would choose not to be vaccinated because I'm strong Catholic. However, my sister booked me to a flight, and it's for the Philippines, and the strict rules are I can't even board the Philippine Airlines without being vaccinated. And luckily, God is so good, they approved the fourth vaccine, which is Novavax, in July, or it just became available in July. And I'm just trying to find out if it's safe for Catholics to receive that, since it's just a traditional vaccine, and it does, I think it did test on a stem cell, fetal stem cell, but it does cause myocarditis for teenagers, but it's more of the spiritual aspect I'm asking about.
Sure. So I can talk a little bit about that. So the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, those adenovectorvirus vaccines, I think are actually used stem cells for manufacturing, stem cells that were derived from fetal cell lines. I think all of the vaccines used fetal cell lines for the development and of the vaccines, the testing, but they're not used in the, I don't, as far as I know, for Novavax, they're not used in the production of the vaccine. And so, I mean, I don't know how to tell you whether that's how you feel about that, but that I think is a fact. It is a more traditional technology. The vaccine itself is, it's still new. There are randomized trials that suggest that it's safe, but with all vaccines and all products, it takes time to develop that evidence base. To me, it looks like it's likely to have a similar safety profile as the other vaccines. I mean, which is to say, for most people, it'll be tolerated just fine. There may be some side effects that we learn about, later, but I don't know that for a fact. What we learned from the other vaccines is that the J&J vaccine tends to have higher rates of clotting for young women, where the mRNA vaccines, the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines, tend to have higher rates of myocarditis for young men. For Novavax, I think maybe it might be because it's a more traditional vaccine technology that makes me personally feel a little bit better about it. I wish it had been available earlier.
Well, Mary, good luck to you. If you're looking at the morality of it, and doctor, the church has been already pretty clear, even on the pre-existing vaccines like Pfizer and Moderna. I remember the USCCB coming out talking about the gravity of the pandemic and saying that, that those vaccines are, that the COVID pandemic was sufficiently serious to justify the use of these, even despite the remote connection to those morally compromised cell lines. And the Vatican said the same thing. So as a Catholic, I think you could have clear conscience. If there's another vaccine that's, not tested in that, if it's completely free of it, I think that's even better if you can do that. But I know a lot of people are concerned about that aspect of this. But, with the church, I don't think you can be any more, conservative than the Holy Father. You know what I mean? But your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm not 100% sure that the Novavax was tested on fetal cell lines. I saw a story. I should have confirmed this before I came on the air, but I saw a story that it was not. But I've also seen an argument that an assertion that it was by someone. So I'll get back to you, Drew, with the firm answer to that. And maybe you can tell your audience tomorrow or something.
If Dr. Tabali's listening, give me a quick call, Doctor. We'll get you through here. He was waiting for this vaccine to come out. Another contributor to the program here. I do think it might have been tested. I mean, in the back of my head, I do think it may have been tested. I can't speak to that definitively either, but if there's a physician out there that knows and wants to bring some clarity to it, we would love to have you have you join us. All right, we'll move along. Mary, thank you. Good luck on that flight and whatever you choose, but I can't tell you what to do. I don't want to tell you what to do. You can, discern that for yourself. Let's go to Ruth in Phoenix. Ruth, good afternoon. You're on the air with Dr. Bhattacharya.
Yes, hi. So I had a question regarding where I can find resources regarding the studies you guys mentioned. My situation right now is that I'm in the military and I'm pregnant. So I submitted a religious exemption, but they told me that it's most likely going to get dismissed. So they told me I have to take it or I will get discharged. So I do have the right to appeal in case it does, but I would like to get some resources to come up with my letter and to submit it.
All right, doctor, any suggestions?
Yeah, so there's a website called PubMed, and there you can search the medical literature. You can, for instance, just put in miscarriages and COVID vaccines. It'll show you the medical literature. The highest quality papers tend to be in some of the top journals, like the New England Journal of Medicine or in the Journal of American Medical Association. I think for miscarriages, I wouldn't worry so much if I were you about that, because like I said, I've seen the evidence on this, and it's much more comforting than as I told you last year. I worried about it, and I'm not quite so worried about it.
Hey, Ruth, thank you for your call. We have Dr. Tabali, who has been listening and just called in. I'm delighted to have him join us as well. Dr. Tabali, thank you for joining Dr. Bhattacharya with a conversation here. Novavax came up. I know that you were waiting for that vaccine to come out. What can you share with us about the vaccine and its connection to those aborted fetal lines?
Well, first of all, I just wanted to say nice to meet you, Dr. J. I'm a big fan. Brilliant guy, beautifully articulate. I agree with virtually everything, all your points, all the way along the line. And nice to meet you. And I'm just right now passing on the road where those five family members were killed at an accident.
Wow.
On Sunday morning. But the Novavax vaccine, it's made the particles that self-assemble to form the nanoparticle. That's made in moss. It's raised in moss. The aborted fetal cell lines weren't used in the development of it, but they were tested. Now, quantitatively, there was more testing done with the messenger RNA vaccines than the Novavax, but it still has an association with the testing. But I'm a big proponent of the Novavax. And I, as a trained bioethicist, master's level, I would strongly urge anybody that wanted to be protected by a vaccine and were reluctant to use the messenger RNA vaccines, Pfizer, Moderna, to really give the Novavax a look. It's out there. It's widely distributed. It's available. Side effect profile is expected to be significantly less than messenger RNA vaccines because of the standard amount of what's injected in and so on. But so I'm a big fan of it.
That's good to know. Well, Doctor, thank you. We're grateful. Dr. Bhattacharya, if you want to follow up at all, feel free to go ahead and do that.
No, that was really well explained. Thank you so much. I learned from that, too. Thank you.
Yeah, and Dr. Bali is excellent. He's also an epidemiologist. I'll go back to the phones. If you're just joining us, so we're taking a look right now at dropping fertility rates as well. Is there a connection to vaccines at all? And doctor, I always want to be very hesitant when it comes to this. I don't want to frighten people away from taking these types of vaccines, so I think we have to be very balanced in our approach to this. Just some of these reports that are that are now coming out. On another issue, just before I go back to the phones, there's a lot of people who want to talk to you. I want to get monkeypox in here. We're hearing a lot more about that. And that vaccine has not been tried yet on a large scale. It almost sounds as if though the World Health Organization is kind of using this outbreak that is being reported as an opportunity to maybe collect data on large-scale distribution of the vaccine. I think it's fair to ask the question, are people, you know, are they being turned into lab rats in some respects? I mean, how, I don't want to put words in your mouth. What do you make of what we're seeing here with this? What are the ethics behind this? I'd love to get your perspective.
So first of all, let me just set the stage about monkeypox.
Yeah.
It's not a new disease. There was, in fact, a big outbreak in the United States in 2003. But it was in a very different community. There was imported prairie rats that infected some vets and some kids that were like caring for the prairie rats that caused an outbreak, and it was self-limited. Here, what we have is an outbreak that's at this point, the vast majority of people who've been infected are in the gay community, and unlike before, which was spread by these prairie rats, it seems to be spread mainly by sexual encounters. I think. The right way to approach this is, you know, with compassion, with love, but also to recognize that the people that are highest risk now actually are in the gay community. The vaccines, I think, they've been used before. It's not that they've never been tested. It's just at scale, I don't know. But they can be used even after you get infected, if you get it early enough. It's the best tool we currently have to address this epidemic. It's not nearly as infectious as COVID. It doesn't spread by air so easily, for instance. And so those outside of the communities that are most effective, I don't spend too much time deeply worried about getting it. It's not like I don't think that it will spread outside of that community if public health intervenes appropriately by methods like contact tracing, methods like deploying the vaccines in a focused way. So I think that's the right approach right now for monkeypox.
All right, we'll go back to the phones, take a few more calls. Our number, 888-914-9149. We'll go to Tricia listening to us in Sonora, California. Hi, Tricia, good afternoon.
Hi, thank you both for taking my call. I'm calling because my daughter and I are 26, and I have been vaccinated. We have been waiting for the Novavax. It's not available in our county. But yesterday I was tested, found out I have COVID. Hmm. She's very ill right now. She's going to go down and get tested too. She probably has the same thing I do because we live in close contact. But my question is, I'm on day 5 of the virus. And they told me to take Paxlovid. I've been approved to take Paxlovid because I am over 60. But they said you have to take it by day 5 in order for it to be of any real benefit. And yet, like, I haven't had a fever since day before yesterday. I'm better. Still have some of the symptoms, of course. But I don't know whether I should go ahead and take the Paxlovid. Is it safe? And if my daughter, because I understand it's still experimental too, and or just let our systems deal with the virus on our own. She does have a risk category of being overweight. I don't seem to have a risk category other than my age, being 60, over 60. So I wonder if you could give me some advice on Paxlovid.
Sure. So Paxlovid is a drug, an over-the-counter drug. Just as you say, normally you would take it within the first 5 days. It tends to be more effective in people who are unvaccinated. It, in fact, was tested primarily in unvaccinated people. In vaccinated people, for instance, President Biden, who took it, he got this, he got COVID, then he got it looked like he recovered, and he got it again. That rebound is very common with Paxlovid. If you're feeling much better, your symptoms have improved in the last 5 days. Mm-hmm. I don't know that there's a huge important reason for you to take it. Now, if you're worried about getting really sick with it, and it just seems like you're getting worse, or your symptoms aren't getting better, you're 60. It's not you're not actually in a super high risk. If you're 80, I might tell you something different.
Right.
For, uh, for, for your daughter.
Well, I'm actually over 60, but over the air. Pardon me? Go ahead.
No, I was going to say for your daughter, who's I don't know her age, but she's obviously younger. She's going to. I mean, it's she's in a much lower risk category, even being overweight. And so I don't generally think it's a good idea to use it in that setting. But again, if she is concerned or there are other health conditions I don't know about that put her at a higher risk category, then certainly she should go ahead and use it.
Right. Well, Tricia, thank you for the call. I hope you feel better. And Tricia's comment made me wonder, just a final thought here, doctor. She has COVID. She'll have the antibodies. She has immunity right now. Does she need to get a vaccine? And to those who have not yet been vaccinated but are saying, well, it's been a while now, I think I'm probably going to get it, how effective are the initial vaccines, the Johnson & Johnson, the Pfizer, the Merck, those vaccines against these current variants like BA5? The president had two vaccines and three boosters, and yet he's gotten COVID twice in less than 2 weeks.
Well, I think, first of all, the first question, I don't think that the benefit from getting the vaccine after you've had COVID and recovered is very high. Now, it's the people in high-risk groups that it might be some benefit to, but for most people, if you've had COVID and recovered, you're pretty well protected. So I don't think the marginal benefit of the vaccine is huge in that group. And again, you have to talk with your doctor to get good advice. And as far as how protective are the old vaccines, you know, none of them work to stop you from getting it. A lot of people, including me, who got vaccinated, got COVID. What they do work at is reducing the risk of getting severe disease, going to the hospital or dying from the disease. That's why I recommend anyone who hasn't had COVID before, especially people in high risk groups, very high risk groups, you know, older people, people with certain chronic conditions like diabetes, to have the vaccine, because that reduces the risk of dying if they should get COVID. But if you had the vaccines, you know, now almost a year or more ago, it's very likely that they're not going to protect you at all against getting COVID. You shouldn't expect those vaccines to stop you from getting COVID.
All right. Well, doctor, I got a hold of there. Thank you for your wisdom and for your advice and for your insight. We're grateful to have you here. And if people want to follow you or track you down, is there a Twitter handle or anything you want to promote?
I am Dr. J. Bhattacharya on Twitter with just the letter day, J, D-R-J Bhattacharya, Bhattacharya, every third letter is an A.
I love that. That's great. Thank you, doctor. Always good to talk to you. We'll talk again soon. Appreciate you being here today.
Take care. All right. Bye now.
That's Dr. J. Bhattacharya. As I said, he teaches at the Center for Primary Care and Outcomes Research at Stanford University School of Medicine. Specialist in infectious disease. When we come back, I have a moral question that has kind of haunted me a little bit. And it's something that made national news. I don't think a whole lot of people are talking about this, but I'll get your take and we'll talk about this when I return. The Relevant Radio studio line is sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters, flexible premium life insurance. You know, for less than $12 a month, a 40-year-old can get $500,000 of coverage. Go to relevantradio.com/Forrester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
A man who had a $25 million reward on his head and was perhaps the single most wanted terrorist in the world is dead after a successful U.S. airstrike. Ayman al-Zawahiri took over al-Qaeda after the death of Osama bin Laden. Al-Zawahiri has been indicted for his alleged role in bombings of the U.S. embassies in Tanzania, Kenya, both in the late 90s. He also was connected with the first World Trade Center bombing and, of course, 9/11. He last made an appearance in a pre-recorded video released in May to mark 11 years since Osama bin Laden was killed by a U.S. airstrike.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that was big news. A lot of people got text alerts yesterday, and the nation waited to see the president address the country, announcing the death of al-Zawahiri, the terrorist who was killed by a drone strike yesterday. He was bin Laden's second in command. And I saw this, you know, and people rejoice in his death. I remember when bin Laden was assassinated. I was overseas at the time, and I was in another nation. And I remember the restaurants, the bars, people gathering around these television screens to hear the news. And of course, he was a big name, right, on the international scene. And so is this guy. The White House, if what they're saying is accurate, they conducted a drone strike against the head of Al-Qaeda. And that kind of comforted me. And I'm glad, wow, one less terrorist. But is it moral to feel that way? Is it moral to even think that way? Well, the White House reported that it was a strategic, very surgical strike, you know, that they took him out. They confirmed his death. You know, the U.S., of course, as you know, they abandoned Afghanistan last year, leaving behind, what, $84 billion worth of military equipment. We have no boots on the ground there, except perhaps for the CIA. And that means no independent verification of a lot of reports. But there apparently was some independent reports of this explosion in Kabul, and they have later confirmed, yeah, this is what happened. You know, if indeed it's true, and I believe it is, I believe they took him out, they wouldn't make that announcement if it was. You got to remember what happened with Osama bin Laden when he was taken out by SEAL Team 6. Remember that? A lot of people were rejoicing at the death of bin Laden. And to me, when I sat back and I thought, you know, these guys are unjust aggressors. You know, they're combatants, right? Don't we have a right to terminate them to keep society at large safe? Then the other side is, well, hold on. They're human beings. You know, do we have the right to kill them? Should we kill them? Should we perhaps have strategically went in and captured him instead? Was that a better choice? A lot of questions to talk about. Whether or not it's moral to go after somebody who at the present time is not waging war on your country. Is this vengeance because of what he's done in the past? Is it justified? Now, right now, and this is my own perspective, Monsignor Stuart Sweatland is going to join me. I'm going to get his take on this. Former military person, of course, great contributor and a great host on this network for years, a brilliant mind. From my vantage point, Al-Qaeda doesn't appear to be a major threat today, at least. I'm not saying that they're not going to be or have not been in the past. Again, I don't have access to intelligence reports. So what the president does and, you know, our intelligence agencies do is something radically different. But it does appear that al-Zawahiri was at home. He was struck by a missile, not on a, you know, not out on a campaign making plans to attack or anything along those lines. So should we try to capture him? Were we justified in terminating him? And where do we draw the line? I mean, many lives have been taken. Many lives might be taken in the future. I'm joined this afternoon by somebody who can help us sort this out. You can join me, too, anytime you want. Feel free to join the conversation at 888-914-9149. Monsignor Stuart Sweatland is the president now of Donnelly College in Kansas City, Kansas. Another great institution. Check them out. And he's back once again. He's an expert on just war, and I thought we'd tap into his understanding of this issue for a better way to navigate the complexity of it. Monsignor, good to have you back.
It's good to be back, Drew. Thank you.
So you get my take on this. I saw the president last night. He was, you know, saying, hey, we'll hunt you down no matter where you are. We've gotten you. You know, of course, what he did historically is one thing. What he's doing now, I'm not quite sure. But I wondered, could we have captured him and respected the life? Or are we justified in going against what is a combatant and perhaps an unjust aggressor? Is Monsignor with me, Maggie? I think I might have lost his connection. I'm not sure if we did. I think we'll reconnect to Monsignor and get his take on it. Here's some more of my thought on that while we make this reconnection with him. And I don't know how you felt about this when you heard the news. Did you rejoice? Like, yes, we got him. I mean, were you happy about the demise of this terrorist? And can we as Catholics close the chapter on this? Is this an injustice or is this justice? Monsignor is back. We can talk a little bit more about it. I'll share with you what Thomas Aquinas had to say. But Monsignor, I love your thoughts. You can pick it up right there.
Yep. Sorry about that. Got bumped off there for a moment. Modern technology. First, biblically, God and thus we who imitate God as Christians should never take delight in the death, even of the wicked. I use, for example, when I teach this, Ezekiel chapter 33, verse 11, where the Lord says through the prophet, say to them, as surely as I live, declares the Lord, I take no pleasure in the death of the wicked, but rather that they turn from their ways and live. So we should never rejoice in the death of any person, because death is an objective evil. That being said, we can be happy or satisfied that there's been a disruption of an ongoing aggression. And this is where, of course, we don't know all the facts because we don't have access to intelligence. But as far as I can tell, Al-Qaeda continues to be a operative group that is conspiring to do real harm against the United States and its allies. I believe the last official attack on U.S. soil by Al-Qaeda is the people who were killed at Camp Chapman in 2009. The Naval Air Station Pensacola shooting in Pensacola, Florida, on December 6, 2019. Was attributed to Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. So there is an ongoing conspiracy against the United States and its allies by this group. So there is an ongoing aggression. And obviously their leader is a walking command, control, and communication center. So he is a legitimate military target. All that being said, I agree with you, Drew, that if all things being equal, we could capture such a person and bring them to trial, because this is more of a criminal activity than it is a military activity. And that would be better both for the intel that might be gotten that might help us degrade this organization even more, but also, you don't in a police action, which is right. This is more like, you don't shoot first and capture later. You try first to capture, but only shoot as a last resort. Now, this was an attack in downtown Kabul, as it's now correctly pronounced.
Right.
And this is in the kind of the ritzy area of the city where the embassies and ambassadors are. It was his current family home. The Taliban completely violating their agreement in the Doha Accords. Obviously, we're hosting him and allowing him to be there. The U.S. government took great care to make this an attack that, as far as we can tell, just killed him, making sure his family wasn't there and others. So at least in that sense, I think they carried it out with some degree of precision and exactness. But the uncomfortableness that you feel, we should all feel, because death should not be seen as a solution to problems.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. I'll grab a couple of phone calls. If you want to join us, 888-914-9149. Here's the thing about not going in and capturing him, Monsignor. I'm just thinking, in the case of Bin Laden, Bin Laden wasn't holding a gun. The Navy SEALs were able to go in. They took him out. But we don't know what would happen if they went in there. We could have lost U.S. servicemen. There could have been collateral damage if we went in. Were we justified in dropping a missile on this guy? St. Thomas Aquinas, as you know, he argues that the assassination of a tyrant can be legitimate under limited and extremely limited, I guess, circumstances, but where it's generally serves the common good. You got this great doctor of the church saying that you can do something like this. How do we what filter do we look through? I mean, how do we best understand when we can drop a missile on somebody and when we should go in and maybe risk lives to capture someone?
Right. Well, obviously, with the Afghan situation, I can't imagine how we would have been able to go in without, a huge amount of destruction being done. Plus, we'd be violating a sovereignty of another nation and creating what potentially could be a much worse situation. So I think we have to be realistic that since we've left Afghanistan, we don't have the means to easily do something like capture someone in the middle of the capital city of Afghanistan. As far as the Thomas Aquinas, there he's talking about regicide, about the removal of a tyrant, a king who has or sovereign who has become a tyrant. And that is a little bit of a different situation. Here, we're taking out the leader of a terrorist organization, one of the most wanted men on the, I think he was definitely in the top 10 FBI most wanted list. He may have been number one. I don't know. I didn't look for, didn't look that up, but he definitely was in the most wanted list. And so we're capturing someone who's more akin to a criminal. I like to say when I teach this, when I'm teaching ethics about interrupting and disrupting terrorist organizations, we should think of terrorist organizations more like we think of the mafia or other organized criminal activities, drug cartels or things like that. We shouldn't elevate their status to right. being like unto a nation state, because they're not. And that's what they'd like us to do. So I think it's very much we should think of this in terms of more of the interdiction in into a criminal operation. In this case, though, with ongoing deadly intent in their charter, in their approach, in their stated goals as an organization.
Well, I'll tell you, stay with me. I take a short pause. When we come back, I'll take your calls. Let's take a look at it. Did you rejoice in the death of Bin Laden? Did you rejoice when the president announced last night he got the second in command? And what was the lens in which this was viewed? Was it one of vengeance, of retaliation? Did we send a message to the rest of the world? If you do this, we'll hunt you down. How, as Catholics, are we to look at this? And what's the proper approach to respecting all life? Our conversation continues right after this. We receive hundreds of your phone calls every day, all thanks to the Catholic Order of Foresters studio line. Our sponsor offers flexible life insurance and annuities. Visit relevantradio.com/Forester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
Your Life Connected, The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, thanks for joining me. You know, last night I happened to catch the president address the country. He was rejoicing in the death of a terrorist. And part of me, I got to be honest with you, part of me is kind of like, oh, you're almost glad that this guy is no more. But then the moral and the Catholic side of me came forward. And I thought, I was challenged by this last night. I thought, should we as a nation be rejoicing in the death of any human being? You know, I know these terrorists perpetrate horrible crimes. You can go back to Bin Laden and 9/11, and you can go through countless acts of horror that have been perpetrated by many of these terrorists. I remember, I think it was Federico Lombardi, he was a Vatican spokesperson, when Bin Laden was dead, and Monsignor already said this, he basically made the point that as a Christian, you can never rejoice in the death of any, you know, of another individual, because each person before God has an inherent dignity, right? And even though you might hate what they do, do we rejoice in their killing? Some people say, yeah, it's justified, right? That what we did was right. We may not like it, but we've neutralized perhaps a grave threat that you know, could really take a lot of innocent lives in the days ahead. The thing about the president that bothered me a little bit, he didn't address an ongoing threat. He wasn't saying this guy had these plans to do X, Y, and Z. He just kept using the word justice, justice, justice over and over again. You know, he had vengeance. It sounded like, we got you. And my guest today, Monsignor Stuart Sweatland's here. I want to tap into his perspective on this. You know, he's an expert on just war and President Donnelly College. We'll take your calls, too. I have about 10 minutes left, so if you want to get in, feel free to dial in. I'll try my best to get you on there. But, Monsignor, I want to pick up on this point of the tone and the message. It wasn't like we did this because we knew another threat loomed and this was happening. It was more about vengeance and justice. We got you. If you ever attack us, we're going to hunt you down. It doesn't matter how long it takes. Give me some perspective on this, if you could. How did you read?
Yes, and I was not happy with the rhetoric that the White House used, excuse me, that they referred to it as justice has been delivered. I'm quoting right from the speech. Justice has been delivered. I wish I, you know, could have been there to say that's not how you want to say it, Mr. President. because, and this is a man that it was really in many ways a co-founder with bin Laden. He, the intel community says that he was the intellectual, you know, heart of Al Qaeda, that he was the mastermind behind the, you know, attack on 9/11 and many other attacks, that in many ways, bin Laden was the money man and the public face and the inspirational speaker. This man was a doctor and not much of an inspirational speaker, if you've ever looked at any of his set pieces that he's put out there. But he was the intellectual spine, if you will, or the intellectual heart of and often the strategic heart. So in that sense, I think a very good argument could be put forward that this was an attack against an ongoing threat, because Al Qaeda continues to want to, you know, they want to rule the world with their ideology, and they look upon us as one of the biggest obstacles and our allies to that goal, and therefore they consider themselves at war with us. So I think it could have been put that way and should have been put that way, rather than in the language of justice, which leads one to believe it was just a vengeance attack.
All right, let's grab a caller too. Frank's been waiting in Philadelphia to join the conversation. What's your perspective? Frank, good afternoon. You're on the air with Monsignor Sweatland.
Hi, Monsignor. Hi, Drew. Last night when I first heard it, the first thing that popped in my mind was midterms. They're going to look good. But then I was listening to Biden speak, and he kept referring to himself. I gave the order, I did this, I did that, and I thought to boost his approval rating, because it's real low right now. Because also, this guy, I don't want to say his name, they know where he's been at forever. Why they choose last Saturday to go after him? I'm thinking it's all to make themselves look better for the midterms. Right. And I want to hear both of your opinion about that part.
Frank, it's a great perspective. And Monsignor, I'd love to get your take on it. I mean, we are close. We're months away from those midterms. And these types of actions often do give you a tick. But I don't think it's going to really move the needle that much. Your thoughts?
Well, they were tracking, we now know they tracked him down mainly by being able to track his family to this location. And then through observation of this house for some period of time, he actually made an appearance on the balcony. They were able to confirm it. They were able to see that he had a habit of coming out of the balcony at certain times. And it was on the balcony, supposedly, they attacked him. So, there was the idea of a time, and they wanted to attack him when his family was not in the house, because they're innocent civilians and should not have been part of any targeting. And you want to limit any collateral damage. Obviously, the family would have been. So in that sense, the timing, I think it met all the criteria. The go order was given earlier, I believe, in July to go ahead and attack when the situation was right. So the timing was the timing. You can always, kind of have a jaundiced position that politicians do things to bump their approval. There's no doubt that's true. I think more, we've got the year anniversary coming up. We got the anniversary of coming up for the withdrawal, and the Biden administration wanted to show that they had the ability still to attack terrorists in Afghanistan if they arise. Yeah. I think more they were trying to vindicate their policy to leave Afghanistan because that anniversary is coming up.
Frank, thank you for the call. Monroe Township, New Jersey. Maria, good afternoon. You're on the air with Monsignor Sweatland.
Good afternoon. I guess I was overjoyed, I guess, like everyone else at first, but I had second, third, and fourth thoughts. And what's bothering me is, what if he would have repented and we robbed him of that opportunity by going in and just murdering him so quickly like that? I mean, should we be thinking about that too?
Yeah, thank you, Maria. Your phone was breaking up a little. Let me just rearticulate that for those who may not have heard it. She rejoiced like many Americans when they heard the death of the terrorist. But she says since then, she's had second, third, and fourth thoughts because perhaps we robbed him of the opportunity for repentance. And Monsignor, I'll give you some final thoughts on that.
And that's exactly what the prophet Ezekiel says, that God wants us, the wicked, to repent. He doesn't want them to die. And so our caller is exactly right. And matter of fact, I'm going to challenge everybody. I'm going to try to do this myself, is to offer prayers for the repose of his soul. Yes, he's our enemy. Yes, he was behind killing lots of Americans. But we're called to love and to pray for our enemies. So I'm going to ask people in their next rosary or the next time they join in prayer, to think of praying for the repose of the soul of this man. We do have the right to defend ourselves against ongoing aggression as well.
So where do you stand on it? You're okay with this assassination?
Assuming that there was a good reason to believe that we're taking degrading an ongoing conspiracy against the United States to harm and kill our citizens and our ally citizens, I think we are justified continue to attack leadership of Al-Qaeda until they quit their aggression against the free world.
Yeah. Monsignor, I have a few minutes. I really want to ask you one more question before I run out of time here today. It deals with something the Pope said. He tweeted out this yesterday. He said, and I'm going to quote the tweet, quote, the use of hashtag nuclear weapons as well as their mere possession is immoral. Trying to defend and ensure stability and peace through a false sense of security and a balance of terror ends up poisoning relationships between peoples and obstructs real dialogue, end of quote. I would love your take on that.
I think this is a very challenging tweet from the Pope. I think there's some really strong moral arguments behind what he's saying. Obviously, you can't lay those all out in 144 or 288 characters.
Right.
But, you know, I wrote about this in the not this particular tweet, but this argument that the Magisterium is more and more making. We have bishops in the United States now who are saying it, like Bishop Weber from the Archbishop from Santa Fe, and the Pope and others arguing that if you can never use these weapons, because to do so would be disproportionate and would directly attack the innocent, then to even possess weapons that can never be used is problematic and they're arguing immoral. I think they have a point, and I think we have to see how can the world step back from this mutual assured destructive idea that is keeping a peace of a sort, but not the kind of peace that God wants for us.
Monsignor, let's do this. I'd love to have you back to discuss that. The use of nuclear weapons, armaments, all of that. So let's do that in the not-too-distant future. Thank you for being with me. I'm out of time for the day. Until our paths again cross tomorrow, may God bless you.